Yo team, can you hear me? Yes? This is wonderful Jackie McMillan. And when she was born, Venus was at the Occupy degree, 26 degrees Scorpio, whose image is a joyful musical band moving through city streets. Yes. Because we are here to upgrade with trickster medicine our effectiveness. Trickster likes against all odds, so we want more music in the streets, more theater, more creative disruption. We have some famous disruptors here as well. You know, and this is Robin to her Batwoman, Robin Hogue. Yay. And our radiant greeter is Tware Cheka. And even though he has many planets in the eighth house, which is kind of backstage, he said he wouldn't mind if I said a little bit. I've known Tware for a very long time. He is joining us this night after serving 7 years in the federal penitentiary for growing, as a community service, for growing sacramental plants. And so we're welcoming him here back from the underworld. He is at a halfway house now called Hope House, so I call it Halfway Hope House, because we're all if we all did what we knew, we'd all be in great shape. So everything right now has to do with kind of practicing our own mojo. So it was not protocol for Tware to be released from Halfway Hope House for a night, but I said, but I'm hiring him, and there'll be job interviews. All right, you all are job interviews. And they said, oh, well, if they're job interviews, and so we want to make that mythology true. And we go, yes, wonderful. And we also have, of course, our great Kenneth Mason, master of backstage. He is Scotty to our enterprise. He is the recording and sound maestro. And we love backstage. It was my friend Catherine Neville who said, do you know why we call backstage the green room? And I was like, oh. And she said, it's from Greek theater. And it was the green room because it was dedicated to Dionysus, the green man. So every actor, before they went on stage, regardless of their role, would dedicate themselves to the beautiful flora and fauna of this planet. And that's why we call it the green room, even though musicians go, it's never green. But we go, it's mythologically green. So all of us are emerging from our customized underworld here in different ways. You know, we call all of our ordeals empathic research projects, or as a friend of mine says, panic early to avoid the rush. So we are here also on this fantabulous night. This is our prologue, really, but Venus is emerging from the underworld where she's been hidden so close to the sun, you know, and we with her. So Oya is trickster, feminine potency that hurls her horsetail whip and summons the winds of change. So Oya is drumming us out. Now, Venus Inanna goes to the underworld and has her ordeals, and then has her Sukal, her best friend. I also have Sukals here, Kelly Gardner and Tara Griffin, who we reciprocally rotate Inanna Sukal roles, because nobody gets out of the underworld by themselves. It's really collaborative cahoots. But what happens when Venus Inanna emerges, as she is right now, because the myth is the Venus orbital cycle, when she gets back from the underworld, she recovers for a while, and then one day, according to the Sumerian poetry 2,500 years ago, she's contemplating the wonders of her own vulva, going, oh, it is so great to be a woman. And the idea occurs to her that she will steal culture back from Enki, the god of wisdom, who has stolen human culture and left empty celebrity baubles in its place. And it's very hip of the Sumerians to say that anything, anyone unchallenged will become a tyrant, even the god of wisdom. We go, yes. But what she does then, you know, in very brief form, is she sails to the island of the tyrant who has stolen human culture, and being a feminine trickster redeemer, she doesn't go, grr. She gets him drunk on poetry and stories and liquor and sacramental herbs, and he gets so jolly that he begins to give back to her what he's stolen, mies, M-E-apostrophe-S, these different parts of human culture. So he got, and the first, the lead art is the erotic arts. He says, I give to you the art of fantabulosing the vulva. And she goes, I take that. And amusing the phallus, I take that. And then comes real estate and science and astronomy and everything else. She puts it in her boat and sails back. And that's why humans can have a wise renaissance of collaborating with nature. Again, they hummed to us 2,500 years ago. So what it says is those who survive their journey to the underworld earn the opportunity to be trickster redeemers in the culture now. So to all of us, you know, all of us, I have one CD of a really great show I did with my friend Deborah Felmuth in Syria, and we were like, where there's too much Mars, let there be Venus. And she's lived in Syria so long, and I met her there, and it is so beautiful once, and may it be again. But the power of blessing is so strong underneath the turbulence of the Middle East. And we say, you know, the oppressor really seeks the medicine of what he oppresses in micro and macro forms. And so we go, the art form of blessing. Because in Syria, before its chaos and turbulence and sadness, every moment was full of blessing woven throughout the day. You know, anything else, madam, you know, salam tek, only your peace. You know, and the phrase you could use all the time, every 20 minutes, is Islamu idain, may the divine bless your hands that have made such beauty. So then Deborah and I engaged in what I've come to call blessing poker. She goes, and may when you wake up, may the birds sing to you and the smell of pomegranates, you know, saturate your heart and open it up. And I go, I see your blessing and raise you one. And when you wake up, may the orange blossoms cascade in front of you and the birds delight and sing in your ears. And she goes, I see you one. And so we're here to promote blessing poker as part of, it's part of Inanna's gift of returning art form to the too hot world. So all over the world, these 3 days when the sun stands still and we with it going, whoa, da, da, da. You know, there's Stonehenge, and as Eddie Izzard says, the less well-known Woodhenge and Strawhenge. But what is going on all over the world where at these important moments, the sun shines through the stones or it shines through and illumines the painting at the back of the cave? It's humans inviting, metaphorically and literally, the power of the sun to illumine the desirable guiding story of that community. So in that spirit, you know, all of us here who, for whatever reason, passing through, or lifers, you know, in Washington, D.C., we're here, you know, close enough to the river. My late great friend Dr. Wu said, all the eccentrics are lined up along MacArthur Boulevard because the river protects us. And we go, whoa, and we're just sending things down to, you know, Mordor. which is also very beautiful underneath. We want to, you know, encourage complexity of storytelling because there's so many mysteries at work. So we too are inviting power in to animate the desirable story. So yes, I have, those of you who've been hanging with me for years know I have Muti. Muti means power and medicine. True power is that which heals. So I have freshly harvested coyote hair from my friend Stella Coyote. I have Syrian tobacco because we bless everything. And we say, O spirit of the trickster redeemer within each one of us, waiting in the green room for this time of destiny, to dree our weird, which means to play our role in destiny, open the path for each one of us that we may contribute our medicine to the culture at this time with great heart and creative hijinks. Hua! There we go. And, you know, Part of our dynamic is change the metaphor, change the culture. You know, even physicists are wondering about the Big Bang theory if it isn't just some kind of Viagra fantasy. And they're more going about, what about the perpetual unfurling? And we go, perpetual unfurling. So part of the resonant theme of now, you know, Uranus and Pluto are squared to each other, I'll key that in, you know, but in the 60s, when they were together, Uranus, the trickster, redeemer, the change, the upheaval, Pluto, death, rebirth. So they were conjoined in the 60s. Anybody here born in the 60s, you are the 60s. And now they're squared to each other, which is about integrating that and experimenting with that and refining that so that our words and our metaphor and our actions are supporting our dedicated vision. So, you know, in the 60s we did, you know, power fist, yeah. But now we're turning it into Moody palm blessing. You know, and it's so effective, you know, where again, where there's too much Mars, let there be Venus, like, and we go, yeah, that was good for the 60s, but now it's wafting. We love these moments of commerce between worlds. We are all here by the power of the dedicated mojo, It is an excellent time right now for each one of us to write our manifesto of dedicated devotion. Some things are always true, but there are times when they're truer. This potent magic time where power seeks entrance into the world, we say dedication magnetizes opportunity. You know, so everyone here is clearly a pragmatic mystic, meaning applying all spiritual teachings to make the neighborhood better, the large neighborhood of our planet better for all beings. You know, and I like to say, you know, democratic animism, democracy teased into a willingness to collaborate with everything. I often wonder, what is unique to our species? Not meaning to exclude the insects who are attending, but our human species, aside from our rudeness, I think that our unique capacity is the capacity to borrow qualities of intelligence from plants and animals. You know, and we say, let all natural facts be social strategy metaphors, you know, in myriad ways that we'll begin to explore. But it says, you know, if we love wolves, become more like wolves to protect wolves. And animals that show up now, all the great myths, or at least the Grail legend and many myths, they begin when nature sends an animal emissary. You know, and King Arthur says, oh, the animal emissary, we must mend our ways, we must seek the waters of life and be appropriate collaborative humans. So animal encounters now are very powerful and important. I mean, I lived with a half coyote for a long time, longer than I've lived with any human, actually. I just realized, going, wow, Stella, God. And I just want to bring up the animal that wants to attend. It was several days ago I came back into my house and there was a really large, like this, you know, the length of my arm kind of thing, dead possum in the living room. I'm like, Stella? And she goes, oh, and I go, all right, it is your nature. But it was, you know, dead. It was eyes glazed and mouth in death grimace. Later, Googling revealed that they have more teeth than any mammal, 50 teeth. And I go, ooh, dental luck, that's good. Okay. but it was not breathing. You know, even when, you know, it's like, and I was like, oh, what do we do? What do we do? It's very big. I don't want to just put it in a neighbor's yard, you know. Although the thought passed my mind. But going, what the? And then out of the corner of my eye, I saw that it was breathing. I go, oh, my God. And it had this grievous, you know, CSI neck wound where Stella had brought it into the house. And I go, oh, my God, well, it's grievously injured. Oh, my God. What do we do? Stella, I know we're going to take a long walk. Okay, so we went for a walk, and I go, well, what do I do with the thing? You know, God, the best thing would be if it wasn't there when we got back. And when we got back, it wasn't there. And I was like, wow, that is such a class act. And it wasn't dead or anything. I mean, it was, you know, no bad smells in the neighborhood. It was playing possum, but I'd never seen that. So I call it resurrection possum, and we have resurrection possum medicine. And so for anybody in the world that we might be frustrated with, like, you know, oh, Obama, we just go, he's playing possum. And we want to invoke Resurrection Possum as part of our team, you know. But anybody, you know, any animal encounters, what's the quality of this medicine? So I'm still working on possum. Possum is an ingenious being. It doesn't get rabies. It's antibacterial. I mean, it's just, whoa, amazing. And we go, okay, possum, welcome. So part of the dynamic pattern of now, the sky-earth story, is so heartening compared to what we think of as human news. Because we have this hot conflagration. We know there's extreme weather, so we want extreme mythological weather. You know, a wonderful friend of mine, Bob Goff, you know, says, I've never met an extreme weather denier. You know, so, you know, he's out there working for renewable energy on the Indian reservations. He just dances around, you know, the climate denying thing, and I go, and he just says, notice any funny thing with the weather? And everybody, you know, no problem. When he's talking to evangelical Christian audiences, because we want to speak with everyone, he says, we don't want the fuels from hell, you know, the underworld, the oil and coal. No, we want the fuels from heaven, the sun and wind. And we go, yes, yes, metaphoric shape-shifting is excellent. So underneath this hot conflagration, there's a beautiful, beautiful opportunity moving into place. I'll say it, and then we'll delineate it. But it's called a grand trine in water, and it really begins now as the sun enters Cancer, this watery realm. And waiting for it is Neptune, which is the intelligence of dreams and mythology and fairy tales and the ideal and symbolic thinking and all of that. And then Saturn, which is our dedication. And then by the time we get into July, Jupiter's storytelling god, you know, enters Cancer by the end of this month, and then it glides into this beautiful triangle in water, like, oh, Saturn will be stationing at 4 degrees of Scorpio, and Jupiter will be at 4 degrees of Cancer, and Neptune will be stationing at 4 degrees of Pisces. It's very, very beautiful. And it reminds us that at Kairos moments, moments of pivotal cultural and historic times, it's where the worlds are eager to intersect. You know, where the ideal world wants the channels to be open to it, and what opens it is our artistry. We say the purpose of the artist is to paint doors in the wall of the reality police. The purpose of the artist is to invite power into the world. We don't need to always source everything, but to invite it. This is the Venus dynamic. Trickster chimes in by saying, against all odds, are the odds that Trickster likes, and that's why we go, perfect. So underneath the hot reactive conflagration, the cool waters of life. You know, the queen serene part of all of us, regardless of our temporary age, race, and gender assignment. So Pluto provides a cauldron, you know, into which we can toss things and ladle things out. I like saying, although the pronunciation must be very exact, NSA, that we are here to be Terraists, restoring the world. Terraists, there we go. Yeah. Oh, it might drive them crazy. But so the cauldron of redemption and rebirth, you know, and then Uranus, Oya, is the lightning of grace invited into the cauldron. Saturn provides the ladle whereby to pour forth the waters of life. So all of these metaphors are crucial, you know, and we say where there is too much, you know, hyper-yang death frenzy, like, which is rampant, you know, going, ah, the dementors of doom are so, relentless, and, you know, but where there's too much, you know, Mars, then we invite Venus, the underlying quality, the mythology of that land or that place, the art form, the music. And one of the things that we were remarking on, Jackie and I began to collaborate in when? 1989, when Robin was being born. We were we were drumming him in. He was like, there, I guess I'll go in, even though I'm a Pisces. But your husband, Shima, died, and we went to a funeral. He was a protege of Baba Olatunji's, and all the great drummers were there. And there was this moment, and you've confirmed it for me because I remember it, where there was this great drumming, and then we stopped, and we could all hear drumming coming from some other place. And you said chanting as well. Mm-hmm. So it's like, again, music, invisible, opens up avenues and channels to the invisible. Ooh, getting a little goosebumps now. So what we call in, you know, this realm between the worlds, you know, cooperators are standing by, but part of the human deal is it is our job to invite. And an invitation is anything we do with Saturn dedication. So as we gather here, by placing a vase of flowers on the table, any small or large thing, if we simply add dedication by the placing of these flowers on the table, may it be that beauty enter the world. May there be civil discourse here. Now, those of us as undercover agents in Washington, D.C., like to sprinkle, you know, just little blessings across doorways. May all who cross this doorway, you know, be incapable of telling lies, you know. Just we're allowed to set in motion anything of which we would be the happy recipients, which is why on the Trickster phone call on Monday night, which you can join, talk to us later, you know, somebody said, you know, what do you think about Wanda Sykes, you know, saying, Rush Limbaugh wants Obama to fail. I want Rush Limbaugh's kidneys to fail. And we go, no, that's a little Mars, but thank you. We can work with it, though. The trickster blessing would be, we would wish for Rush Limbaugh's kidneys to work so well that it cleaned out all the poisons in his body and left him in a pool of befuddled innocence. You know, that's where we're going. We want to, again, you know, we want to put lots of things in our magic backpacks tonight, or smooth little pebbles that we put in our pockets to remind us of things, like, I wonder how this is perfect. And even so much wanting Tuere to be here tonight and running into bureaucracy, and at first I was getting harumphatudinous, going, no, they're so confused, halfway, Hope House, and I was like, no, aspire to practice your own teachings, Carolina. I go, what a novel idea. All right. I see him here. I invite the channels to open up. And I got the jolliest call from lovely Miss Burke the next day going, of course, we can, no, never mind those silly rules. And we go, again, it's the default setting that we not be hot and reactive, that we be cultivating an ever larger repertoire of responses in order to be allies with nature's evolutionary ingenuity of ever-expanding responses and therefore also ever-expanding metaphors and language, all of that. Enough of weapons and immature violence, you know, that distracts us from our common global task of healing our relationship with the earth. And in speaking to allies in Syria, what they're clear about is no more weapons, no more weapons. It's crucial in these complex times of originating impulse that comes up, you know, Arab Spring and all, and then the mob, the possession, the complexity comes in. We want complexity to be able to hold multiple stories at once and multiple narratives and wonder. We say certainty is a booby prize, you know, and all of the pattern of now, it says, you know, empire and dominance, you know, row you bastards for thousands of years. Now it's kind of collapsing. Pluto and Capricorn says structures are collapsing, bridges, infrastructures, governments, economies, the old forms in our personal lives and also in our collective lives, which is why if you notice that most cable news shows are sponsored by Viagra, because empire just can't get it up anymore. So that's what's collapsing. And then underneath, you know, the dominance, underneath is the culture of reverent ingenuity, collaborate with everything in a humble way, no longer looting nature, but borrowing nature's recipes in a collaborative alliance coming up. So all of us become inviters. You know, again, inviting everyone, come on over from the thing that's going down to this thing that's coming up. You know, again, Alan Watts's great phrase, you know, no sense clinging to the rocks that are falling with you. You know, come on over here, this redesigning. So we want to kind of tease this into all kinds of things, especially against all odds. So, yeah, so change the metaphor, change the culture. Very strong, put that in a little pebble in your pocket. You know, so we say metaphors are the incarnational garb whereby power enters the world. Metaphors are this invitation. And Americans have largely, and I include myself, lost the art form of metaphor because it's not abstract. Blessings and the employment of metaphors are always tangible. As our late great ancestor, too soon, you know, John O'Donohue says, when the ghost of loss stands behind you, then may the ancestors place a cloak around your shoulders that will mend your life. Ah. And when your boat is sinking in rough water, then may the moon spin a silver pathway upon which you may safely tread to shore. And in working with the team, people were pretty good at when this horrible thing, but when it got to then may this good thing, it got all abstract. Then may happiness, and it's like, no. The mango, the cloak, the path, you know, again, the incarnational sensual garb. You know, we also want to put on our council table that mythic figures are metaphoric animations of intrinsic intelligence in nature. And the divine would be delighted to be liberated from past confines of human imagination. We offer the metaphor and the story and the language for power to come in and animate it. So we can shapeshift that. You know, again, it's good to be informed and reverent, but we can shapeshift it. You know, and many cultures have this thing, the dweller on the threshold, you know, when you're at an important place, you meet this scary thing and all of your fears, and we go, yeah, but we could change that. You know, how about the dweller on the threshold is your own wise, compassionate trickster self going, you made it, come on over, yeah? We're allowed to shapeshift many, many things. So, again, the sourdough starter, the things I'm working with always, all natural facts, social strategy, metaphors. So when I've talked before in talks about slowing way down in order to speed up, you know, and this is a time of that, all the farmers, the organic farmers in the audience would come up and say, all of your metaphors are our facts. And I go, yes, that's fabulous. Like what? They said, well, when you slow water down with berms and such to run it through a field, the more you slow water down, the faster it infiltrates. So allies everywhere. So the more we slow down, with our, you know, by in this week, this time, this summer, you know, just writing even a few words of our manifesto of dedicated devotion, we're slowing way down, and it strengthens our signal, dee 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 dee, so that we're more likely to infiltrate and avenues of unexpected opportunity open up. You know, as many people know, I'll go anywhere. I go to CPAC, the underworld, to see if there are allies there, and it is a mega toxicity fest. But there are. there are allies and there are common stories. And that's why we're kind of in trickster training. It's not training for nothing, going, how do we spiral? You know, and something from two CPACs ago, a Tea Party guy, saying no rules on corporations, no rules on anything, no rules, no EPA, because I want to play the games that I want to play. And I go, Akito, you step in and you go, well, that's incredibly interesting because the essence of games is rules. And he's like, oh, I hadn't thought about that. And I go, in fact, we're on a planet with limits. There's only so much water. We're in a game now. And he's like, perhaps I better go think my, metaphor? And I go, yes, please do that. metaphor means to carry across. It means to carry between the worlds. That's what it means. It's a bridging thing, so we love that. So then we take with us our ally etiquette. You know, if this is what's going down and this is what's coming up, the desirable collaborative trumping the dominator, then we want to also honor ally etiquette. Is our manner of relating and offering, serves, Renaissance and collaboration, or it is an imposition, serves empire and dominance, no matter what label we stick on our ass. So I'm always working with our progressive team, which is like, serving empire, I can always get into trouble by saying, feminists who lose their sense of humor are the new patriarchy. And then people will call into the radio show embodying that, going, oh, thank you for embodying that humorless thing. So that's a useful thing. We have our tyrannometers. You can take the tyrannometer for measuring ourselves, or others. And again, we all want to have standards that we aspire to. And that's part of the power of dedication. We can't even be who we want to be by ourselves, which is the power of vows, going, I want to go this way. Hold me to this. And it's a particularly powerful time to do that. So I was eavesdropping on a seatmate on a plane on his computer going, okay. And he was clearly some, high-up, middle-level management, major media guy. And the edict that was coming down from on high that was on his computer that said, in the reporting of all stories, eliminate subtlety, increase urgency. I go, oh, that's perfect. God. Thank you so we're going to do the opposite. Water reflects a reverse image. We want to eliminate urgency, increase subtlety. In all of these great teachings and which we find everywhere and in novels and, everything, there's a great novel called The Initiate Brother. It's about how to maintain tranquility of purpose when in the realm of evil, roiling, collapsing empire. So it's, relevant. And so there's this particular brother sisterhood that knows how to slow time down. So they're incredibly effective. And we go, yes, slowing time down. So with that in mind, we want to put some standards in place if we want to increase subtlety, eliminate urgency, because urgency makes people lie. So into Pluto's cauldron, I think, writing in caps, I think, goes into Pluto's cauldron because you sound like a crazy person. and hyperventilating certainty, like, oh, no, just go. Now, there's a lot to be hyperventilatingly certain about, but it still is a booby trap by the reality police to suck people's good-hearted energy and into inadvertent service to empire and colonialism in some sneaky-ass way. But one of the things I like to, I actually want to make a bumper sticker out of this that just goes, tyranny is compensatory weeniedom. Because it's like, let's just suck the faux glamour out of that meanness. So a friend of mine who's a river guide, again, all natural facts, really useful, says in the center of every turbulent rapids river, there's a silver tongue of calm in that river. And you want to find that. And we go, right, in the most turbulent of circumstance, there's a silver tongue of calm in that river. We go, right, we want to magnetize to that. So we know extreme weather. We do know extreme weather. We know right now there's a 47-square-mile fire outside beloved Pagosa Springs. We go, oh. We know there's flooding in Calgary. There was an incredible story on Canadian news of a woman who apparently all of her and her neighbors live without radio, without TV, without car. So one of their friends heard about the rising rivers in Calgary and drove by to pick her up. And they were all saying, I have never seen anything like this. It was thousands of people with little knapsacks, trudging away from the rapidly rising waters. This woman came by. She said, I wished I could pick up everybody, but I was going for my friend. And then there was a woman with a baby. And they asked her friend Maggie Martell, what did you bring? And she goes, clothes, two dogs, two cats, animal food, and I don't care about the rest. And I'm like, ooh, it's very strong Pluto transits everywhere, but that was very inspiring. But then at the same time, see, we're getting this imbalanced weather. Whoa, you know, more tornado deaths in 2013 by, you know, some huge fold than 3 years ago. And we know in nature, when opposite forces come together, nature creates spirals to resolve the tension. And we want to become spiraling people. But the increase of tornadoes and hurricanes is simply speaking to us about the enormity of the imbalance that nature is trying to resolve. So we want to be able to read these things, everything speaking to us loudly, increasingly. But what happened in Calgary was the flooding, of course, ruptured the sour grass, the hydrogen sulfide of the Legacy Oil and Gas Company, which is extremely toxic. So we go, whoa. And even here in our little hood with these wild, wild storms and driving through tornado warnings from Charlottesville to here and all kinds of things, and then, you know, with people getting, many people being wonderful, but many people just kind of flipping out, I go, you know, I'm not sure we humans are completely ready for what's coming. You know, and that's why we do want our manners and our mojo and our alertness and our animal instincts, because the animals know. When we think about, you know, what is an expression of, you know, extreme, well, the word that Jesus uses in Aramaic, which is translated into evil, the word that he uses, that he spoke in Aramaic, simply means unripe. We go, so what do we do with unripe things? We put them in a brown paper bag, you know. So we might want to imagine a brown paper bag descending over the Capitol going, you guys raping, you know, there. There's, you know, incredibly poignant things. We go, whew, you know, how do we suck the chi? How do we, out of the atmosphere that allows horrors to happen, bombs set off to kill rescuers who are coming to respond to the first bomb. And you go, oh, ooh. You know, we've been, as a species, culling the compassionate among us. We go, this is insane. There's a term for it that geologists and long studiers, it's the Anthropocene era. This is the era where humans are affecting, you know, the environment for everyone. We know record disasters. There's a hypoxic dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico, 8,000 square miles. Plants, algae, jellyfish, poison ivy doing really well. So we know the word disaster means this is against, this means the underworld, and aster is the stars. There are these disasters. And the antidote is to consider, as we're doing this evening, Khan is with and sitters the stars. So the antidote to disaster is to consider. We don't need to know astrological language, but when we pause to consider, we're lining up, you know, and that's why the trickster is so crucial. We know that there are huge bee die-offs, use of pesticide, the tragic, you know, human rude, kill everything, you know, spray everything. It's like, oh no, bees sacred to Venus. It's all speaking to us. We would be nothing without the bee pollinators there. So there are, you know, extreme weather and extreme violence and extreme sadness. And we do want to suck all the glamour out of cruelty, which is why I've long been chanting, no nookie for nukes and no pussy for polluters. You know, so as we all kind of arrive here, part of the collective zone in which we're all in this large pulsing dream, you know, just even to get here tonight, you know, and the collective is sort of like, this is the time where Mercury, Elegba, information hands the baton to the watery realm. But to get here to this calm that we're going to increasingly make available, it was sort of like, and we remember that precedes ah. You know, many people also, you know, have been wondering, because I do so many charts increasingly, and, you know, anything we have as a dedicated language will create intimacy, greater intimacy between us and the world, in which it can speak to us through synchronicity. Sometimes when I'm doing readings, you know, three, four, sometimes five people in a row who are all over the world on the phone or whatever, don't know each other, don't know their charts, but they'll all have a planet at one same degree, and I go, apparently 12 degrees Leo is reporting in for duty, you know. So any structure we have that we're dedicated to is how the world will speak to us, in which we can see its beautiful order that we want to align with. But the fears, what if we've done it now and we can't make our way back? We worry, you know, and then we want to change worry, of course, into wonder. We wonder how we wend our way back. So we are conjuring. To guide us into the Yamaya realms in a moment, I've, you know, worked for 12 years with my buddy Robert Bly, whom I treasure so deeply. And one of his later poems is called Keeping Our Small Boat Afloat. And he says, so many blessings have been given to us during the first distribution of light that we are admired in 1,000 galaxies for our grief. Don't expect us to appreciate creation or to avoid mistakes. Each of us is a latecomer to the earth, picking up wood for the fire. Every night, another beam of light slips out from the oyster's closed eye, so don't give up hope that the door of mercy may still be open. Seth and Shem, tell me, are you still grieving over the spark of light that descended with no defender near into the Egypt of Mary's womb? It's hard to grasp how much generosity is involved in letting us go on breathing when we contribute nothing valuable but our grief. And then this crucial part, each of us deserves to be forgiven if only for our persistence in keeping our small boat afloat when so many have gone down in the storm. Aha. Because we want to honor all of our ancestors and all those people whom we love dearly whose boats have gone down in the storm. And Bly was talking to somebody about this, and he said, that's what it feels like when you get to be my age. Each of us deserves to be forgiven, if only for our persistence in keeping our small boat afloat when so many have gone down in the storm. So I love Ralph Waldo Emerson says, finish each day and be done with it. You have done what you could. Some blunders and absurdities no doubt crept in. Forget them as soon as you can. Tomorrow is a new day. You shall begin it serenely and with too high a spirit to be encumbered with your old nonsense. Yay. So we're going to go Come On Home with Yemaya, in which we've skidded in like, and go, the memory from my childhood was a friend's birthday party. We got taken up in a glider with a tow plane towing you up, and it's like, and then the glider guy let us push the button, which releases the tow plane, and then you do, and then it's like from, it's like, so there you go.
Yeah.
So come on home to Big Mama, says Yamaya. The songs to Yamaya, the intelligence of the ocean, the intelligence of water, the fierce protectiveness of life from which we come. Ah, she's feisty. So it's like, you know, come on home. It was an irresistible invitation to speak in Portland, Oregon, because the name of the church was Big Mama's Church of Christ the Girly Man. Oh, I gotta go. It's like, so my buddy that I also work with, Coleman Barks, his version of Rumi says, whoever finds love beneath hurt and grief disappears into emptiness with 1,000 new disguises. And see, Trickster says, we don't care what you humans do, we care the manner in which you do it. Shape-shifting, disguises, all welcome. You know, Amargan, the great Celtic bard, you know, it's he has a long piece, but the gist of it is, you know, I have been the guest of 100 kings. I have been the light, you know, gleaming on a wave. I have been a boar in its boldness, on and on and on. Shape-shifting, empathic, Neptune, dreams, vision, Mama, big ocean, we're all in this dream together. And it's useful to frame that. Everything is going to increasingly make more sense if we preface every kind of real thing by going, I dreamed that. And that everything we encounter in some way is a part of ourselves, even if it's a disruptive part. We go, I dreamed, you know. It's a good way to approach the news. You know, I dreamed the Israeli parts of myself were doing these terrible things to the Palestinian part. Whatever, just to frame it that way, because it puts it then in mythological symbolism where we can begin to invite in the healing waters, the antidote. In Hawaiian, it's called ho'oponopono. You know, cook everything back to what it is intrinsically, redream it, heal the world by going within as one of our skills, to go outward, yes, but inward, and ideally connected. You know, there was a study that said, to the degree to which people are ironic is the degree to which they have the capacity for compassion. And it's curious, because at first we think of irony as a British bitter kind of a thing, but to be ironic means you have to be holding two stories at once, usually what is and what should be. Okay, and the uncomfortable energy lives in the discrepancy, but that's the energy for change. And to be compassionate is to be constantly expanding our capacity to hold multiple stories at once, to replace certainty with wonder. You know, again, so that we're not reactive. So this sublime, serene, you know, many of the great myths, mythic figures, again, metaphoric animations, they're cooperators standing by. So we love Kuan Yin. There are many versions of Kuan Yin, who is a watery image being. Sometimes she's surfing in, you know, on this tide. You know, we are here to unfurl our sails, to ride this summer solstice super moon, moon closest in of all year, full moon tonight, you know, to ride this tide. So Kuan Yin is surfing in on it. And the other images of her are in deep serenity, but with 1 foot forward, capable of responding. She's a first responder, you know, and we want that. So I want to bring in some of the players, ancestral and current, in our political dream, of which they are all a part of us. So, and the transits to them, the them part of all of us too. So Michelle Obama was born with Venus exalted at 0 degrees of Pisces. Neptune is transiting that, and we go, yes, infiltrate through the women, infiltrate through the women. But it also means, you know, in this playful and profound way, we can speak to the better parts of people, the mythological parts, in dreams, backstage, in myriad forms of ways, all kinds of ways, and any intimate exchange. Elizabeth Warren was born on the summer solstice with her son in Cancer, conjunct Uranus, the spicy trickster, and with a little degree to Jupiter and Aquarius. She is teasing sane, reverent common sense into public policy, and we go, we're rooting for you. Again, all of our teammates against all odds. You know, we remember that part of what Uranus the trickster provides us is the great Hafez quote, the small man builds prisons for everyone he meets, but the wise woman ducks under the moon and tosses keys to the beautiful and rowdy prisoners. You know, and that's part of our job. Everybody walk out tonight with a handful of keys, because it prevents that salvation complex thing. It goes, no, just toss keys, you know. Here's a key. You can wear it as a necklace if you want, but I recommend unlocking yourself and passing it on, you know. So I always like to invite in, especially now, one of my favorite spirit aunties, which is Marie Laveau, the great voodoo queen of New Orleans. When she was born, Pluto was at 4 degrees of Pisces. Neptune's now at 4 degrees of Pisces. Come on in, Marie Laveau. Again, in the summer, Jupiter will be at 4, Cancer, Saturn will be at 4. So we go, ooh, come on in, Marie Laveau, about whom it was written, she did not create cultural movements, but a woman of her substance understood what was at stake. She saw a role to be played and played it to the hilt, helping to coalesce a scattered and damaged, you know, community into a coherent, ecstatic, syncretized, all-inclusive culture. We go, yeah, all right, come on in, Marie. We want that quality. So for everything that is, you know, real, we go, muggle no more. We are here as pragmatic mystics. So we know about WikiLeaks, but we have Wiccan leaks, okay? So so Wiccan leaks is let anything up to no good be revealed, rendered harmless, and an occasion for mirth. Wiccan leaks is very effective. But I want to bring in some of our players because, you know, when we understand the mythology of everybody, people we approve of or disapprove of, and Pluto says, oh, just throw that approval, disapproval criterion into the cauldron. You know, the divine doesn't give a fig if we approve or disapprove of something. Magic means a willingness to collaborate with everything. Going, I wonder how to do this thing. So Edward Snowden, his sun is at 29 Gemini, his Mars 24 Gemini. He's having Jupiter transits. So in the Chinese fortune-telling cookie thing, you might go, oh, look at that chart. We imagine you're going to get a lot of attention and travel to a foreign land. There we go. But his moon is in Scorpio, as is Bradley Manning's and as is Julian Assange's. Again, they're doing the moon-Scorpio excavation of the hidden work. There's patterns everywhere. But Edward Snowden, we have his North Carolina will give you anyone's birth certificate for 10 cents. You know, so we have Edward Snowden's birth time, 4:42 a.m. Sorry, Edward. June 21st, 1983. There are images for each degree of the zodiac. It's an old tradition. So we have his moon at 13 plus Scorpio. I kid you not, this is the image for that degree. Wilderness explorer taps into a telephone line to report his findings. Telephone lineman keeping lines of communication open. The cosmic switchboard. We go, wow, Edward. That's pretty cool. Now, Snowden was a big admirer of Bradley Manning's and also of Julian Assange's, and both of them have Venus quintile Pluto. Again, Venus is the art form. Pluto is that which is hidden, the art form of making the invisible visible. And they go, ah, Bradley Manning, moon in Scorpio, right next to Mars and Saturn. No, Mars and Pluto. He's got a moon-Mars-Pluto conjunction. His Pluto is at 11 Scorpio. Saturn's been there all winter at 11 Scorpio in the sky. The image for that is the Renaissance court. So we go, all right, part of the team, everybody's got their difficult assignments. But the image for his moon and Mars is exiled political leader rallies people to march to the Capitol, outspoken challenge to existing order. We go, I mean, that's just out of the book. And we go, well done. You know, we're sorry for the challenging thing. But Edward Snowden, these are quirky. Edward Snowden and Bradley Manning are quirky, ingenious people who could make computers when they were like 11 and 12. You know, hacker heroes like Lisbeth Salander, another person whose chart we have from those fictional books. But Edward Snowden said, society really seems to have developed an unquestioning obedience towards spooky types. Did we get to where we are today via a slippery slope that was entirely within our control to stop? Or was it a relatively instantaneous sea change that sneaked in undetected because of pervasive government secrecy? He studies Buddhism. He's a martial arts guy. He's kind of complicated. Both Michael Moore and Glenn Beck are his supporters. And we go, oh, trippy. You know, he built computers. He was part of a whole computer geek hero thing. There's a wonderful novel called Aleph the Unseen, which is a blending of the Arab Spring, the Arabian Nights, and hacker heroes, full of complexity. You know, again, rooting for democracy in Arab Spring, but fully aware of what happens when originating good impulses are then kidnapped by mercenaries or the violent kind of mob. So we want to be agents of cool in an increasingly hot, reactive world, agents of responsive cool. So again, we invite that in, you know, where we enter situations, may we cool things out. It's where we get our word cool. You know, it comes from Yoruba word kulu kulu, which meant completely responsible, and it also meant cool like temperature. So they say in the magic of language, you know, imagine that we take all the heat in our head, You know, we cool our head and take all that heat and move it into our heart, because then we can enter hot situations as agents of responsive cool rather than caught up in the reactive deal. So Edward Snowden is strippy. At the age of 20, he wrote great, I mean, he's a quirky, interesting character, cultivated. At the age of 20, he wrote, great minds do not need a university to make them any more credible. They get what they need and quietly blaze their trails into history. Alrighty then. Yeah, so it's all, you know, dreeing one's weird. If somebody gave me a Bradley Manning, again, we support all of our team, again, in all of their circumstances, you know, and support them dreaming their weird. But even the opposition, again, we go, we dream that these parts of ourselves were, because people have been snookered into being grown up. It's why Stuart Brand supports nuclear power and why so many people really do believe that Monsanto will save Africa. They think they're being grown-ups. Well, but it's important, we know better, but we're not going to get all finger-waggy because that would serve empire. We do know more, but it's important to understand so that we can step in. You know, again, Akito, we understand you are dedicated to saving Africa. How wonderful. We join with you in that, and here's where that's completely... but again, to understand the thing, you know, to step into the thing and then be surprising. I mean, I'm fairly, you know, colorful. I have a great time going through airport security because, really, people go, God, I love purple. It's my favorite color. I wish I could wear that. And I go, another job, and you could, you know. But you get... You know, what's the purple thing? What's the purple thing? And we go, well, purple is the adaptogenic color in nature that is the organism's most skillful at adapting rapidly. And they're like, oh, fantastic. Anyway, so again, woof, woof, wanna play. We're moving all of our emotional default setting, really, to woof, woof, wanna play. And if somebody doesn't, we spiral on, you know. Again, but it's surprising. I mean, and I do test these things, you know. I mean, I go to CPAC, you know, woof woof, wanna play? Apparently not, but over here, yes, because you know, I have friends who are Tea Party members, even though they're completely insane people. I mean, the governor of Maine is completely insane, talking about, you know, he was blocking the suppression. There was a law passed in Maine, you know, to block toxic chemicals in baby bottles and stuff because it's a toxic, you know, estrogen mimic. And he said, so little girls have little beards, what's the big deal? Oh, God, you know. And he also, in talking about, you know, somebody who was standing up to the community going, that guy's been giving it to me for years without Vaseline. It's like, whoa, do you really mean this? Anyway, so there's the crazy thing. But there's also... You know, and we know that. We have plenty. And we go, yes, reveal yourselves so that sane, reverent, common sense can go, whoa. You know, but there are also people in which, you know, Occupy and Tea Party, there's a conversation to be had about inspiring the ornery, disobedient, ingenious part of everybody. And I think, you know, we don't want to put anything, but in the dream, you know, for Obama, against all odds, we want our dream Obama. The only way he could pull off denying the XL Keystone pipeline is if we see a national educational movement and speech, of which we're all a part of. It's got to have pictures. This is what tar sands looks like. These are the spills. This is the danger to our water. It's got to be something, you know, of the tenor and the next kind of up of his speech on race. And again, we don't pin it on him, but we want to create an atmosphere where that could be possible. It's very against all odds. And we also have to kind of, you know, again, the blessing, you know, may we see the ancestors, including Obama's mother, placing a cloak of guiding earth wisdom and protection around his shoulders, and a wise council of wolves, you know, protecting him from bad influence. I mean, it's a wheel and deal thing. This commerce between worlds, it's my friend Robinette Kennedy who said, you know, the modern concept of worship is so degraded, you know, you are great, or, you know, even the goddess thing, you know, you are great, I am nothing. And she said, you know, in hunter-gatherer society and throughout the Mediterranean, there was great reverence and respect between the visible and the invisible, between the incarnate and the spirit world. But it was much more collaborative, she said. The invisible seeks incarnation as much as we seek communion with it. So we make these vessels. You know, when we make something beautiful, it is an invitation for power to come into the world. So there's that dynamic. With Barack Obama, I think we also sort of see Resurrection Possum. is surrounding him, going, you know, you've looked dead, but we know you're being wily. Okay, we hope that thing. So resurrection possum, cunning possum, trickster changeling, so alive yet seeming dead. Teach us wise old possum magic that reacts from instinct, not from head. Show me the way to slip past danger. Fill me with earthy wisdom great, that I may be secure and happy, living life and trusting fate. Thank you, Matthew James. So we're expanding our repertoire of responses by whatever animals we encounter must be something to wonder about. You know, now part of the dynamic of this beautiful summer underneath, with the hot reactive conflagration on top, Uranus the trickster will be stationing, it is already, appearing to stand still at 12 degrees of Aries. The image for that, and we can shapeshift or throw things into the cauldron too, but the image for that is defusing a bomb that fails to go off. And we go, all right, it's going to be a hot, reactive summer on one level of the news underneath. You know, how do we suck the chi out of that? You know, already he's talking disarmament, Obama, because Obama's sun is at 12 degrees of Leo. And part of why I was so ardent about his reelection in many, many ways, even though, again, he's a prisoner of empire, okay, we understand, but is that Uranus is trining his sun. But the wheel and deal is, like, if you open the path for sane, reverent common sense, we will back you up. The amount of hatred focused on one human is just appalling, and hatred by our own team. And we go, that's a hot reactive thing. We discourage this, we encourage this. You know, it's part of our dynamic. I think I might give course on charts, but the animal realm, you know, wonderful Lauren Isley says, the magic that gleams an instant between Argos and Odysseus, Argos is Odysseus's dog, is both the recognition of diversity and the need for affection across the illusions of form. It is nature's cry to homeless, wandering, insatiable humans. Do not forget your sistren and brethren, nor the green wood from which you sprang. To do so is to invite disaster. One does not meet oneself until one catches the reflection from an eye other than human. We need all these beings. And so we're also talking to Bo. again, many of these wonderful things. I just want to do a little shout-out to the mythological presence of Pope Francis. It's not nothing that Pope Francis took that name, Francis of Assisi. We go, yes, okay, terrible on gays. And, you know, when I was at CPAC gathering intelligence, you know, and allies, but one person, an arch-conservative, but a sane person. See, there's a big difference between the neocons that the conservatives think of as, you know, ill-educated, yahoo, dangerous, crazy terrorists, and the deep conservatives, different. There's conversation. But a conservative buddy taking me around going, that guy is head of the international, you know, he's based in Latin America. He said, in Latin America, conservatives mean you want to return the king. And, you know, he's a major global Catholic right-wing kind of leader guy. And so the guy comes to us and says, you know, just assuming, I don't know what he assumed I was, but he said, we have the Pope on social issues. We got him. But I'm not sure about the environment and democracy. We might not have him under my environment and democracy. We go, okay, we're working with him on all those levels. But he does, you know, his Mars is at the Robin Hood degree. He's done some interesting things. You know, he broke rules. His first mass was to people in prison. His first audience, he allowed dogs in. They're like, oh, no. He was presented with an ermine-lined red cape by a cardinal, and he goes, no, showtime is over. You wear that. You know, so we go, Pope Francis, you know, allies there. But we want to speak to the good part and encourage that good part. So this summer of sovereignty, there's so much brewing this summer, and so many good allies, and so many good magic allies. You know, I had wonderful Faith Spotted Eagle on the radio show. You can hear it at coyotenetworknews.com, really good. But she said, in speaking about the pipeline, she said, I always say the proposed pipeline, because in my mind, it's not happening. And I go, ooh, we are buddies, this is good. So the summer of sovereignty, you know, this evening, this full moon, this 3 days of the sun standing still that inaugurates this whole summer season of sovereignty is the wedding of all that's been falsely estranged. You know, so we gather to suck the chi out of the tar sands project, you know, and exhale it into manifest sane reverence. You know, again, with our team, when you know, in Denver, people are going, no coal plant, no coal plant. You know, we're going to fight that coal plant. I go, fight, very hot word. I mean, I love Bill McKibben. I do love him. You know, but I often kind of waft to him and sometimes talk going, you know, that fight thing is a very hot word. We're going to fight global climate change. I go, it's very hot. You know, we're going to elicit ingenious responses to collaborate with nature. I know that's a little long, but we got to figure out something. So there's many things. Now, we know, you know, again, all of Canada, I mean, all of Stephen Harper's government in Canada is pushing on this, pushing hard on this pipeline thing. But there is climate justice activism, you know, 1 million comments coming in, you know, and again, support, mojo, blessing, words, 50,000 people have pledged to physically stop this, you know, and it's been forestalled for 2 years, which is a small miracle from the oligarchy. And now there's idle no more, which is a great kind of Libran phrase going, I'm not okay. It's like an Inanna recovering from the underworld and then coming alive going, wait a minute, I'm going to steal culture back. You know, we know, you know, so many things. There is a sneaky thing we want to suck the chi out of, which is there was a school emergency testing in South Dakota, you know, testing against terrorism, and the terrorists were anti-XL pipeline, you know, activists. Those are the terrorists in the school system in South Dakota for their school exercise. We go, no, 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 there's a flag on that play. You know, but we gotta, that's again where trickster and hijinks, we want to inhale that, suck the chi out of that. And we know that the pipeline is intended to ship diluted bitumen and dilbit from Oil Alberta to Port Arthur, Texas to be refined and shipped. And shipped. And it's just, you know, again, insane as we know. But back to the purple things. You know, what I mentioned to Faith Spotted Eagle, too, is I just read this article about purple sea urchins are evolving to innovate survival strategies in ocean acidification. We as humans have set so many rude things in motion, you know, that everything is going to have to adopt, and we want to align ourselves with those qualities in nature which are ingenious at adopting. And sea urchins are called a keystone species. Now, keystone, you know, it comes from a human thing. It's an archway, and the keystone is the thing that supports the whole thing, but we've used that in biology. They're keystone trees. There's keystone species that everything depends on. You know, and so it's intriguing if we read it mythologically. The keystone XL, which I guess means extra large, you know, so the XL means extra large, and the keystone, we go keystone, right? We must protect the keystones. But again, honoring, you know, evolution is to the rescue if we're willing to play with it. So to dree our weird, to play our role in destiny, which is why I love the trickster medicine of ingenuity and play and allying with nature. It's the medicine, it's the sine qua non, because it renders everybody else's good-hearted actions workable. So it is this crucial thing, and again, see me in the back, there's trickster trainings in many myriad forms at Hollyhock coming up, oh my goodness, pretty soon, July 17th, and we might say, well, it's a very long way away, and lots of logistics, and you forgot to tell anybody, Caroline, until now, and I go, no, but trickster will open the path, there we go, because we want to concentrate on the aikido of public engagement, the aikido of public engagement. Metaphoric agility, being surprising. See, anything, I mean, I have a radio show, you know, for 16 and a half years, the Visionary Activist Show, which we call Democracy Now on Mushrooms. So I'm stuck with the activist name, and it's good, but any ist word, we just want to expand our vocabulary, because any ist word, there's already a prison waiting for it. You know, which is why I like saying, you know, rather than environmentalist, you know, sane, reverent people had this to say today. You know, I mean, again, reframe. And it was also at CPAC where, you know, Ayn Rand, you know, Austrian economists all named Wolfgang came up to me and go, who are you? And I said, I'm Coyote Network News Service. I'm a mythological news service for the trickster redeemer within us all. And they're like, wow, that is really cool. Again, we want to create our mythic identities, because if it's surprising, you can dance, you know, and open things up rather than going, I'm a humorless feminist, or, you know, whatever. It's like, oh, I've heard of, you know, if it's known, you know, and again, that's why, again, metaphoric shape-shifting agility, which is why we go, what animal to be, what quality of water or light to be in this circumstance, even if one doesn't know, come on in, whatever I need to be here. You know, in small, again, experiment. You know, nature's evolutionary ingenuity, which is really the trickster, you know, has no category about success-fail. You know, nature does not care what humans will think if it puts, you know, big ears on this mammal. It's just like, let's try this thing and see if the critter lasts for a couple million years. So that quality, other parts of us have success fail, but the trickster says, try stuff, without expectation. Expectation is the partner of disappointment. I knew it wouldn't work. To be expecting with its consequent disappointment is to walk around with a portable prison for oneself and others. But Jornus the trickster says, I'm going to connect each person here in this wild sea we're heading into, with the coolest things possible, increased rate of synchronicity, and all I want from you guys, says Jornus trickster, is willingness. And we go, we're willing, And then they go, ooh, look, the little humans have hoisted their sails of willingness. So if we go into any situation expecting, but if we go willing, then we're liberators. I'm not expecting anything, but I'm willing in all the double entendre, like intending and, hey, what the hell? So we want to cultivate and training these things. Pluto, death, rebirth, is the lord of dis, D-I-S, D-Y-S, means the underworld. So a disease, a disaster, a dismay. When everybody, it was like a talking point, everybody was saying, I'm so disappointed in Obama. And I go, are there no other words? Could you go and echo flummoxed, bamboozled, just whatever. But every time everybody was saying disappointed, I go, you know what that black magic is? Every time people say I'm disappointed, it means I am in the underworld powerless. I go, no, you don't want to keep doing that. So Mother Nature is idle no more in Alberta and everywhere. We're dissolving boundaries, certainly, everywhere. This is also, again, the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington and Martin Luther King's, great speech and mojo there. Civil rights for people, now civil rights for nature. There's a tar sands healing walk July 6th, which is perfectly timed. See, we don't need to know astrology. If our hearts are dedicated, the path opens up and the timing is perfect. And this is to stop the destruction and start the healing. It's in Fort McHenry, British Columbia. And healingwalk.org is a fabulous organization of First Nation peoples, but inviting everybody to join them. And that's why we're going to go a little deeper right now with Oludumare, the deep, 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 deep ocean. When the Gulf ongoing ecocide began in the Gulf of Mexico, there was a good TEDx conference in Washington where the ocean scientists all gathered and they were weeping, scientists weeping. It's a powerful tarot card. And I met this great guy, Rick Gallo from Woods Hole, who's one of the very, very few deep, deep ocean scientists, and invited him on the radio. He was just one of the best radio guests ever. And he was capable on the radio of guiding us into the deep, deep ocean where we never go, nor should we. But he said it's the most amazing biodiversity on the planet. There's waterfalls and rivers way down there, and incredible. And he goes, yes, there's all this destruction and terrible things going on, but you should know, he said, that at the bottom of the ocean there are these vents that are just spewing new life into creation called biogenesis vents. They're like, so new life is being generated all the time. And so we go, right, so we're doing mythological biogenesis, metaphoric biogenesis, linguistic biogenesis, and you're going to take us to Oludumare.
Yes. Oludumare, yeah. Obatalaya. Oludumare.
Wanting to mix up.
Well, they do, they do. That's good. Olo de Mare is the deep, deep, deep ocean. Deep, deep, deep ocean. Apparently, we need to commune with everything. And Obatala is like wise, wise, positive masculine, positive Saturn leadership. So it is Neptune and Saturn. So we're calling this into play. And then with Yamaya. So, yeah, we want to go deep. We want to go deep and then to the surface, back up, all of these things. Another great buddy of mine that I met through Robert Bly, his wonderful Arab-American poet, Naomi Shihab-Nye, her famous, most famous poem is Kindness. Do you guys know this poem, Kindness? But it seems really, really good. Again, in this deep place, we're going to the bottom, to again, with the joy expressed by Robin and Jackie and all of us, too, going joy, joy. We want to mix things up, you know. It's like the genius of reggae music. You know, the darker the lyrics, the jauntier the tune. You know, we're all gonna die. You know, we want again. It's like when Frank McCourt wrote his brilliant memoir of growing up in tragic, tragic, difficult circumstance in Ireland, Angela's Ashes. I was heartened that he had to rewrite the narrative voice three times because it is such a tragic tale of sadness and death and slavery and everything, and his first narrative voice was too bitter, and it was unreadable because it was too sad. And so he had to reach back and find the innocent dignity of his child heart to narrate it, and that's what made it work. And that's what made it this triumphant over the underworld, you know, incredible thing. So Naomi says, "Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things, feel the future dissolve in a moment like salt in a weakened broth. What you held in your hand, what you counted and carefully saved, all this must go, so you know how desolate the landscape can be between the regions of kindness, how you ride and ride thinking the bus will never stop, the passengers eating maize and chicken will stare out the window forever. Before you learn the tender gravity of kindness, you must travel where the Indian in a white poncho lies dead by the side of the road. You must see how this could be you, how he too was someone who journeyed through the night with plans and the simple breath that kept him alive. Before you know kindness as the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. You must wake up with sorrow. You must speak to it till your voice catches the thread of all sorrows and you see the size of the cloth. And then it is only kindness that makes sense anymore. Only kindness that ties your shoes and sends you out into the day to mail letters and purchase bread. Only kindness that raises its head from the crowd of the world to say, it is I you have been looking for, and then goes with you everywhere like a shadow or a friend." So we go, kindness, what a good medicine to, again, take with us and to be willing to cultivate and to invite. And the inviting theme, I love the novels of Dionne Fortune. She has a great, she was an esoteric writer in the 50s, 40s and 50s in England. And she had this great character, Morgan Le Fay Morgan, who is a priestess of Isis in the modern world. It's very trippy. I mean, these are 1950s England. She says the purpose of, her character says, the purpose of ritual magic was always to go deep and then to invite larger tolerance into group human collective mind. And that's what we're doing tonight, you know, in many ways. And may we do it through this whole summer. But there's a great moment that I love so much in which, you know, the Morgan Le Fay Morgan, who's hundreds of years old but still cute, so it's a good it's a good character. But things are not going well. Things are not going well. Just everything's messed up. Things are not going well at all. And she's outside her home that she set up as a dedicated thing. And it's under the full moon, as it is tonight. And she's like, and then she walks back inside and she sees the simple bowl of flowers that she'd placed there as an invitation for Venus, who's shining very brightly right now, for Venus, you know, Ishtar, Inanna, beauty and grace to enter the world. And she sees the moon pouring its light into the flowers, and she can feel this downrush of energy, this goosebump-inducing downrush of energy. And she goes, it didn't matter, my mind, going, the dedication trumps the distress. The dedication and the invitation had clearly been accepted, and in the language of the adepts, I was back on my contacts. And I love that antique phrase, back on our contacts. You know, so again, something to keep with us. You know, again, a pebble in our pockets that we take with us, going, mind is like, and you go, dedication trumps that. By this simple thing, You know, again, in the initiate brother, there's a great kind of Virgo moment. We want to cultivate our Virgo standards in this Neptunian awashness. There's a man on whom much is counting, you know, and things are going very, very badly, and lives are at stake. And he retreats to his garden, and everything is off. It's just all off. And even the stream in his garden sounds off. It sounds wrong. It's lost its harmony. So what he does is he reaches into the stream, and he picks up a small stone, and he carefully replaces it in the stream, and the stream has its harmonious voice restored, and his mind clears, and he sees who to trust, who not to trust, and how to save the world. So it's another thing to take with us. You know, when it's like, it's like, just move one small stone. Not any stone. It's the stone that wants, it's the keystone. It's the stone that wants to be moved, going, poof. But again, so in our lives, whether we're engaged in public or backstage in our gardens, it's all part of the dream. In these kairos moments, you know, it means everything that everyone does, thinks, feels, speaks, smokes, eats, may it be a sacrament. May it be about restoring intimacy to the world. You know, and it's all contributing to this brew, you know, of goodness which manifests out. And people can do, you know, I don't know how many of you saw the great movie, The Lives of Others, but it's a really dedicated movie about how even the murderous torturer's heart can bloom again. Maybe not everybody, but we don't know. And, you know, it's like with any form of divination, we say any form of divination is useful to the extent that it guides people to their own autonomy. That's the kind we want right now. And also to limit anybody's capacity to play a good role in the world is spiritual harassment. You know, we just keep it open. We leave room for others to behave in unexpectedly appropriate ways. We don't expect it. We don't count on it. You know, we're wily coyotes, but we leave room. And again, I always use this, but it's really good because the vernacular, wisdom is, you know, in the vernacular everywhere. And at these times of disruption, see, things rise from Olodumare. They rise from the bottom of the sea. Lost texts of wisdom rise up and seek translation into the vernacular to spiral forth. Each person's dedication grants them access to some wisdom in nature, some wisdom of what humans have done in the past that was good that we want to bring forward now. Again, it's, you know, mythological biogenesis of translating things into modern vernacular to spiral forth. So we want to, so that the example is my niece was recently divorced and going to visit, you know, really right-wing, grumpy, you know, strict Christian, disapproving of divorce relatives. And we said, you know, I know it doesn't look fun, you know. And I go, but just leave room, you know, for them to behave in unexpectedly appropriate ways, because you never know, you know. We want to be liberators, not constrainers. You know? And she called up and she goes, that was really interesting. She said, I drove up to their house. They met me with folded arms and glower gazes and said, you know, as you know, we strongly disapprove of divorce. But he was so boring and we're really very happy for you. Come on in and have some pie. You know, we just want to, the trickster redeemer within us all leaves room. Because so that serendipity, you know, inviting in so that, you know, backstage again, the green room in dedicated to Dionysus, the green man, you know, is we can invite in the better parts of ourselves as well as the better parts of others. So our sails are unfurling. You know, and just for the hell of it, you know, again, you don't have to do anything, of course, only if you want your life to work, will you it's encourage that, you know, again, trickster says, I will connect you with the coolest things possible, you know, the right conversation, the right funding, the right thing, the right path opening, the right whatever it is, you know, and all I want from you is willingness. And we just go, we throw our little arms up in the air and we go, we are willing. Yay! All right. And so the divine goes, they are willing. They have hoisted their sails of willingness. Let's send the wind. So our sails are unfurled to cahoot with the winds of serendipitous synchronicity against all odds. And I love that how we're going to close this evening is Jackie had wanted to do something to Ogun. And Ogun is, you know, guy and metal. And I was like, that's very wild. Well, we probably need this, though, because it's strong. Ogun is indestructible. Ogun is the medicine of we can do this. And we go, yeah, positive male. Yeah, we could all use that. And remember from the sacred teachings of wonderful writer Terry Pratchett, he's got a great character, Granny Weatherwax. And when she's setting up to do some impossible thing, people go, you can't do that. You know, it's 1,000,000-to-1 chances. And she says, million to one chances crop up 9 times out of 10 when your heart is dedicated. I go, yes. So this is the part of it, we are as indestructible as steel, and we can do this. On the boards. I'm Caroline Casey. Thank you all for doing this good work. Go forth and be whoopee. Whoopee. Yay. Yay. That's good. That's perfect. We're formally done, but EO is where we get the exclamation point from. Just so you know, because I-O meant it was a Greek stage direction to be delivered with great joy, and the I and then the O was written under it, and that's how we get our exclamation point. So it's a good thing. It's a powerful thing. It means to be delivered with joy and force. So may we all go forth with exclamation points to be used at appropriate moments. You know, go forth. Hey, thank you.